I'm talking in Ango about the Bendowa, wholehearted endeavor of the way. And we tend to think about that as something we're doing. This is our wholehearted endeavor. But what Dogen is wanting to explain is that everybody's doing it, all the beings. There's a human way to have a wholehearted endeavor. And there's a tree way and a rock way and a electric fan way and a sun way and a wind way and a today way. We're doing this together. And in the heart of his wholehearted way text is what's called the section that we've been chanting in Ango and in the morning service, which is called the Jijiu Zamar, the whole self samadhi, I'm calling it. And he's saying, this is the core activity for us and for all the other beings, all in this together. But, of course, we mostly need to figure out what a human way is to be doing this. But that happens in a situation where we're all in this together. I'll read just a short section of it. He says, Dogen says, the wholehearted endeavor of the way allows all beings to come forth in awakening and practice all-inclusiveness. We couldn't do it if all beings weren't doing it. We're not supposed to just invent it for ourselves. So when we think that way, then it's too big. It's obviously, it's too huge, doesn't apply to me, so forth. This is, all of us are in it in our own ways. There's a rock way to be wholehearted, and there's a human way. Many human ways. Anyway, he goes on to say, when you display the Buddha mudra, the attitude, position of awakening, the Buddha mudra, when you display the Buddha mudra with your whole body and mind, sitting upright in this samadhi even for a short time, each and everything throughout the Dharma world is the Buddha mudra, and all space without exception is enlightenment. The land, trees and grasses, fences and walls, tiles and pebbles, all the various things in the 10 directions perform the work of Buddhas. Those who receive the benefits produced by these wind and water elements are inconceivably helped by the Buddha's wondrous guidance, and all awaken intimately to themselves. Those who receive these benefits of water and fire turn round and round the Buddha-making activity, circulating the unceasing, incomprehensible, and immeasurable Buddha Dharma inside and outside the entire universe. Yet such things do not appear in the perceptions of a person sitting in zazen, because this occurs in the stillness of unfabricated samadhi. This is a love song. This is a love song to us all. It's ecstatic and it's really very sober. He goes out to all beings and trees and grasses and then says, and here you are on your cushion. It's a vision and of activity that's grounded in direct practice by the human body and mind, our participation. What does that look like? And he says it's through practice based on sitting zazen. It's based on a practice for us, sitting in zazen, in a kind of samadhi in which that is the samadhi of all beings awakening to the world. There's a human way of awakening and there's other beings' ways of awakening. All beings. Awakening to some window on the underlying fabric of life, the unfabricated natural fabric of life, that is ours and all the other beings. Awakening to some sense of what is here when the blindfolds drop from our eyes, when we attend to the sounds and the sights, not to see a raft of Buddhas floating down from the skies, to the sights and sounds and touch as they are rather than as we think they are. And so for us, there's a lot to do because we are so compelled by what we think we are and what we think is happening. So Dogen says that the world we wake up to is immensely, incomprehensibly grander than we can possibly think. That's incomprehensible. Bigger than we can think. It's a good thing. The good thing. The world should be better, bigger than we can think. It'd be more of a problem if it weren't, right? The last thing I want is for the world to be what I can already envision and understand. Not even big enough for my own life, let alone everybody else's. So incomprehensible is a good thing. So it means bigger than we think, and it also means, in a sense, different from thought, not in the realm of comprehending. There's emotion, there's intuition, there's arms and legs and hands that build and stroke and make zazen mudra. That's not comprehensible. It's real. It's alive. And thinking also, our wondrous ability to think is incomprehensible. Thinking isn't left out. Thinking is really an incomprehensible activity. It's huge. And we don't really know how it happens and how it comes up. And people pose this theory and that theory. And Noam Chomsky, the great linguist, who had, to me, always bizarre theory that one is born with an absolute sort of complete grammar already implanted, and that you then learn in your own language to insert particular syntax and words. That didn't make sense to me. But this is this, how do we, the big question is, how do we make this happen? This thinking is a wondrous, incomprehensible activity. We're not trying to throw out thinking either. I'm only going to be intuitive or something. Oh, it's all incomprehensible. John Ciardi wrote a book called How is a Poem, which he tries to help us comprehend the incomprehensibility of a poem. How is a thought? We don't really know. So, yes, incomprehensible is not something out there beyond us. These words that sound big and vague, or yes, it's all wonderfully incomprehensible. We're here, sort of incomprehensible. That we're spinning and, you know, on a round thing. Are we upside down, or are the Chinese upside down right now? How fast am I moving? It's all incomprehensible, really. And he says it's immeasurable. Now, yardsticks are excellent tools for measuring. But it doesn't mean, once we learn to measure, remember the movie, the guy, our film night, Friday night, one of them does kitchen designs, and so he's got a measuring tape in his pocket, and the way he knows how to relate to a kitchen is to measure the length of the counters. There he is in this monastery in Japan, measuring the length of the counters, because that's our measuring tape mind. And he's so lost, he's going to start with what he knows. I know how to measure a counter. And then he takes on from there. But yes, we can use yardsticks. They're very handy. Will this counter fit in my house? Well, no, it's in the outskirts of a backside of Japan, but it won't fit into my kitchen, but for a lot of reasons. But we start with measuring is very nice, very useful. But it's not a good way to measure, not a good approach to your life. You can't measure your life with a yardstick. You can't even really measure where you are right now in this kitchen in this monastery in Japan with a tape measure. It doesn't really tell you very much. So yes, immeasurable. Good thing. Once again, it's a good thing that it's immeasurable, even though measuring is a beautiful quality, a beautiful activity, and very, very productive. And can be very beautiful in its time and its place. So I want to say this part so we don't feel sort of overwhelmed that this is somehow too big and too grand and too vague. Yes, life is immeasurable, and yes, it's incomprehensible, and that's us. That's our ordinary reality. John Ciardi says, how is a poem? And we say with this, how is this awakening? What am I allowing all beings to come forth in awakening and practice all-inclusiveness? He says, he recommends that we that this come through practice rooted in Zazen. And he's not saying only in Zazen, but he's saying from his experience that a wholehearted, to find out what it even means to be wholeheartedly endeavoring, to find sort of which way is up, to get oriented to what it means to invest our lives fully without being swamped by our activities and without using a measuring tape on them, that Zazen is a very good foundational practice. When he says, when you display the Buddha mudra, the posture in the deepest sense, the attitude of waking up with your whole body and mind, not just in Zazen, but it's hard enough to do in Zazen. So without Zazen, I don't think I'd have an inkling of bringing that kind of open-eyed clarity to anything else. So this is the attitude of aiming to wake up to life at this moment. In Zazen, out of Zazen. So this awakening is through practice, in this as described here, through a practice of life based in the experience of Zazen. And it also involves not knowing. Such things do not appear in the perceptions of a person sitting in Zazen. Knowing is too much like measuring. It's very good for what it's good for, but it's not good for dropping the barriers and walls of our lives. It's not even good necessarily for seeing them. Our life of making and doing, our fabricating life, building and constructing and sewing together, is a beautiful thing. There's a great genius in it. And it's also limited very much by that same very fabricating quality. And so we want to enjoy and use the gifts of being human without being trapped in the underbelly of it, the shadow side of it. So we want to know. This is a very human thing. We want to know. From the time we can walk, before then, we want to put things in our mouth and know. We lick things, we touch things, we sniff things, we look at things, we turn them over. We want to know. And if we can't put our finger on it, we doubt. But that's not necessary quite. We assume that if I can't know what this is, I better doubt it. Well, maybe that's rushing to judgment. How do you make sense of something that you want to have some sense of that of what it is that you can trust? How do you trust something that you don't actually know? Because this is not a practice of blind faith, and that's not what he's talking about. He's saying you want to have a sense of directing yourself wholehearted. You can't, if you just don't know anything about it, you're not, how do you be wholehearted? How do you make sense of the kind of a vision we have and the vision that Dogen has? I think as people, we have a tendency, all of us, to alternate between thinking better of ourselves than we are and less of ourselves than we are. We're confronted with something large and we sort of feel less. But many of us have had awakenings. All of us have had awakenings or openings of some sort, on and off the cushion, icons or benchmarks of our life. And if we have an idea of what it's supposed to be like and our experience doesn't match that, we say, oh, I don't have that. I don't do that. But that's because our mind has created a box around what is or is not going to be called awakening to life. So how do we loosen that box and let those walls down? Our awakenings take place in the language of our own life. That's why we sometimes mistake them for not being awakenings. They don't sound like some other being. Well, why would they? You know, they're happening in the language and context of our own life, the meaning of our own life. We see something that's familiar in a really new light. or we see something that we haven't seen before. We see underlying truth that we didn't understand, that there was something under the surface. You know, it's as though we always see the sun reflecting off the surface of the water, and we see this, the clouds, and we see the shine, and we see blue, and we see clouds, we see riffles, and then all of a sudden, one day, the light is different, and we see that you can see through the surface of the water down underneath, and there's rocks down there, and there's fish down there, and there's a clear water, clear to the bottom, and we didn't know it was there. And we didn't think there was a there because we saw something. We saw a surface, a nice water, nice surface. It's, you know, and the rest is opaque to us until it isn't. This happens to all of us. Or it's the time of feeling a powerful, new, or fresh kinship, understanding of our kinship with particular other beings, the particular whale. Who is telling me about taking their guests out to Point Reyes, and there was a young whale cavorting for them in the water. It wasn't just whales, it was an actual particular whale. And the person who had never seen one before in their life, never seen the Pacific Ocean, had something really new. Now, sometimes we think, oh, I'm here and there's this new thing called the whale out there. And sometimes our world is a little bit shaken and it drops away and we're simply really present. It may be the first time we see a whale. It may be the 10th time. It may not happen with a whale. It happened for me with a whale. It was actually a rock. You don't know. You know. So it wasn't a whale. It was a wonderful experience. Down in Laguna Beach on a Christmas morning. Then it was very quiet. And way out, there was a whale. It didn't move. And eventually, I realized it. Because sometimes I had seen the orcas down there. Immeasurable and incomprehensible. So we don't even know what it is that we're waking up to. But we're arriving, that sense of arriving here and being changed. We're always being changed, and once in a while we know it. When we feel expanded by what we experience. That's what is meant by opening, what is meant by awakening. So we have to find ourselves, each a sense in our own body and mind and cells of what it is that we actually do, we experience, that by which we are changed and in some way expanded. Because the land, the trees and grasses, the fences and walls, the tiles and pebbles, all the various things in the 10 directions are performing the work of Buddhas. All there for us to wake up to. And when we see it as itself, that is the work, the Buddha activity. Doesn't wear a little label and say, this is in the little arrow pointing. See here now, Buddha making activity. And we look and say, that doesn't look like, that looks like a ladybug. You know, life as it is the Buddha-making activity. And then the Dharma gives us a way to take the insights each of us has had, maybe before we started practicing, ever. For me, there was one time way before I ever started practicing when I remember the moment when I, walking sort of depressed across a grassy slope towards where I lived, and I realized that I belonged on the earth. That I was just one more small animal. Probably walking home to my skunk. Okay, so I had a sense of communion with small animals, but I realized that I too was just another small animal belonging on the earth. I can still taste it. Before I started sitting Zazen. So it's not only that Zazen or Zen practice is what shines a light, but the Dharma and our Zen practice help us integrate this and make some ongoing coherence of these experiences in our life, so that when we aren't having bright light experiences, which is most of the time, we can still know ourselves participating in that very same world in which we sometimes know something really sharply. Does that make sense? And this grand Dharma vision doesn't make your or my insight small. It's the opposite. It enlarges it. Oh, my life and my insight are a little expression of this whole total Dharma world, a reminder that I am part of something large, just as myself, without having to become some other being. Our times of being open and connected to our own and or maybe to the world's depths, our times of acting in harmony with life, these are some of the points of our contact with this grand Dharma world that enfolds us because it is us. And we are in contact and included when we don't know it. It's a very good thing to know it sometimes. It's very encouraging, very inspiring. And it changes us. We know we are changed. But we're in contact anyway, even when we don't know it. But we do some kind, one of the reasons we do a practice is that it's not just taking the Dharma on blind faith, that we are have some sense of our participating in it. That even when we don't know it, we are in contact, we are included. We're included when we're not conscious. We're included even when we're blundering around in the shrubbery, like a rhinoceros. We're still included in the grand Dharma world. We're never thrown out. It doesn't work that way. We're just part of it. It doesn't exist apart from us, we apart from it. We each belong. And each of us feels, at least some of the time, some of us a lot of the time, some in the past, some in the present, like an orphan. That's our painful delusion. That, in fact, that is one of the faces of that painful delusion of the separate self, the permanent separate self, that feeling like an orphan. It's a nearly universal human delusion. And what if when that comes up in us, we say, oh, there it is again, that painful delusion that humans are heir to and prey to, that calls for kindness and understanding. At that time, less orphan. So we do a practice, or we listen to Dogen, or we look around in our life, and when we let go of our conceptual mind and world, we let go of our shoulds and oughts and wants and woulds, who is still here? At that time, not the orphan. The orphan is part of the shoulds and wants and woulds and not measuring up. Those of us who saw the movie will always know that there's something a little bit humanly stupid about measuring. When we feel we don't, if you feel you don't measure up, remember the guy with his tape measure. Who is there when we do open our mind and let go of all the oughts and shoulds and wants and woulds? We can call it original self. That's just a name for what is here in this body and mind when the shoulds and woulds and oughts and mights and mustn'ts are dropped. Whatever we call it. However we feel it, or don't know a name for it, which is fine, it is this vitality of life emerging in us and as us. And having some name for it that's very provisional, all names being provisional, is very helpful for us to orient, because our minds are going skittering in so many directions without having names for things that are to be remembered as provisional, not to cling to. Where is my original self? We can, with that, we can orient without language, it's very hard to orient. So how is this original self, this person who is here, the whatever it is who is here, the true person, there is a person here, it's just not the kind of one we usually think of it as. It's always active and always moving. This Bendawa and the whole self samadhi text is all movement, the trees and the grasses, everything's alive and alive, and everything is moving. And we are moving. Always active, always moving. The self in samadhi, in this whole self samadhi, is enjoying the benefits of being alive and is using the benefits of being alive in an endless exchange. When we know it and we can taste that, we have a sense of ourselves being a part of an endless movement that isn't just by human effort. There's a very satisfying, sort of reassuring feeling in that. And at that time, we can have a sense, that sense of using, receiving, and moving, that the Dharma or the Dharma world is not an object apart from us. Nothing is an object apart from us at that point. But because it's not an object apart from us, it's hard to see it. It's like we think there's a thing called awakening, and we want to know what it is so we can see it when it happens, which chases it away. So we think we want to know what Dharma is or the Dharma world so that it has a particular shape. It isn't an object apart from us, so it's hard to recognize. The Dharma world is movement, your movement, not chaotic, endless reciprocity. So when we see things as, when we have an understanding of not chaotic, of movement, of in reciprocity, of coming and going, that's not just all over the place, that's the Dharma world. And we give and we receive and we employ the unceasing gifts in ordinary human ways called wholehearted. The land, the trees and grasses, the fences and walls, the tiles and pebbles, all the various things in the 10 directions perform the work of Buddhas. Those who receive the benefits produced by these wind and water elements are inconceivably helped by the Buddha's wondrous guidance and all awaken intimately to themselves. Those who receive these benefits of water and fire turn round and round the Buddha-making activity, circulating the unceasing, incomprehensible, and immeasurable Buddha Dharma inside and outside the entire universe. You are only asked to do this in a human way. The rock does it in a rock way. The sun does it in a sun way. And we can't know the sun's way or the tree's way from its side, but we can have an inkling of it. Enough of an inkling to have a sense of that reciprocity. And we can learn a sense of ourselves from the degree to which something being as similar to us as a tree, as opposed to maybe rock and ocean and wind, are more different from us. A tree is not so different from us. And so the more we can have an inkling of the tree from the tree's perspective of self and life, and say, oh, there are qualities that in which we are alike. And then we can understand ourselves more because they are the same qualities of life and this endless reciprocity from them to us. And so we learn from the other beings. And we can also be reassured that a tree is doing its life wholeheartedly. We only have to figure out, and it's hard enough, how to do a human life wholeheartedly. You and I are part of this unceasing Buddha-making, this awakening activity. We receive and we turn the wheel of life naturally. It's good that it's incomprehensible. That only means bigger, wider, and looser than definitions. More inclusive, because all definitions have edges. That's how they work. This is inside this definition, and that's outside. All-inclusive is beyond definitions. Not the same as confusing, though. Life is incomprehensible all the time. Sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't. It's always incomprehensible. We're always in it. We receive and we give. Those who receive the benefits produced by all these wind and water elements, wind, water, fire, air elements, are inconceivably helped by the Buddha's wondrous guidance and all awaken intimately to themselves. And then, you know, Dogen goes on to say, you remember this, but this is not something that you perceive consciously when you're doing zazen. We perceive, we enact it, and we have traces of it in our consciousness, like a sense of settledness or spaciousness. Or we have a trace of it in our time out walking when we feel we are where we are, or when we're holding someone's hand and that's what we're doing, or we're face to face with someone and we really listen to them and we learn something. There are many ways in which we are already can know ourselves whole, as wholehearted, and then we can make some coherence about wholeheartedness. It's not just a little blip here and a little blip there. Those who receive these benefits of water and fire turn round and round the Buddha-making activity with and for each other.